This episode of the Squawker Talker is brought to you by Beer 52. Beer 52 is the world's number one craft beer club and delivers crates of hand-picked craft beer to your door. Squawker Talker listeners can get £12 off a crate and two free beers by using the code SQUAWKER at checkout. So if you like a good deal on beer, visit beer52.com. Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and joining me today to discuss, well, it's International Week, so we're going to be discussing all things England, Germany, and the rest of it, is Kadeen Simmons, sports editor of the Morning Star. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Not bad. It's good to have you back in the room.
Thank you very much.
We do have a podcast room. It's not a random, subjective, abstract idea of a room. And also in the room, for the first time in a while, is Nick English. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm not bad. It's good to have you back on the pod.
Yeah, I've been busy, been away, but I'm back in the game.
All action performance.
Yeah.
In and around the midfield.
Exactly.
But moving on now to, before we go talk about all action midfielders, Germany 1, England 0. Gareth Southgate's first game as permanent England manager. New shape for England as well, going into a 3-4-2-1. And Michael Keane getting his debut in a back three. What did we make of it, Cads?
You know, sometimes you get those cartoons where the little kid is trying to beat up the bully and the bully has his arm out, just like the little kid just flailing his arms. To me, that was England trying to beat this Germany team who really didn't care, weren't really bothered, scored a goal and was like, oh, that's it. Game finished. England done their best, but their best against the Germany reserve team was a 1-0 defeat, and that's quite embarrassing.
Mm. It wasn't very competitive, was it?
No, Germany approached it like a testimonial for Lukas Podolski, which it definitely was. England really set out to like make a mark. They're just nowhere near the level. Mm. I mean, the second highest score in this squad, joint second highest score in the squad, is Jamie Vardy and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Wow.
That tells you everything you need to know about this current squad. I mean, there's a lot of potential and there's a lot of talent, if potentially in the right configuration, but it's not like we can turn to experienced players. It's not like we can turn to trusted talent, except maybe Wayne Rooney, but he's obviously dropped at the moment. This team is so far away from being a major force, and everyone knows that. It's just a question of whether Southgate gets given the time to sort of try things out. I quite like the three at the back. I think it suits English football quite well. It really suits our biggest strength, which is always fullbacks, it seems. So, yeah, it was decent at times. There was some decent interplay, but the squad's massively off where it should be to compete for tournaments.
But I was about to say, but it's too early to talk about that. But then Russia is around the corner next year, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah, and Germany, you know, like I said, Germany put out a testimonial squad, and there were so many players missing, and England had a few players missing, but we're not talking like it was a whole first team. And they just couldn't get it done. Yes, they had chances. Dele Alli should have scored that goal. You know, Lallana hit the post. If they go in, you think it could be something different, but they barely tested the keeper.
And if Lampard's goal had been given over the line.
I thought it was a definite nod from Southgate to the potential of that Spurs squad, though, playing a three at the back. So he's like, well, the best players that I've got available to me are pretty much all Spurs players, and they're comfortable playing in a three at the back system. So I'm just going to do that and hope that the Spurs players carry me. That seems pretty logical to me.
On that note, who would you say were England's best performers in the game against Germany?
Dele Alli for me and Adam Lallana, they're two of England's best players. Raheem Sterling, when fit, when playing brilliantly, they're the three best players that England have. And then it's all about whether or not Kane can put it in the back of the net. But those are going to be the ones. Lallana's a great player to have for international football because he runs, he harries, and he's decent on the ball. Dele Alli's just awkward. 6'2", strong, quick, got good shot, he's good in the air. Those are the sort of players that do damage on the international scene. Not players like, you know, as much as I love him, Jermaine Defoe, he's never going to be an international caliber striker. He never has been, he never will be.
One player that there was a bit of controversy about his selection, even for the squad, let alone the team, was Jake Livermore. He lined up in midfield next to Eric Dier. How do you think he did in the game?
I I barely noticed he played. I think it was a really weird game.
Is that a good or a bad thing for playing his position?
Well, it means he didn't put a foot wrong much, but at the same time, you need to really grab those chances by the neck, because if you don't do it in a kind of friendly slash testimonial, when else are you going to do it? And with players to come back from injury, if he struggled to make an impact against this weak Germany side, are you going to trust him, you know, in a massive game? And I was going to say Portugal, Germany, Spain, but England struggled to beat Iceland. So, you know, when they come up against Iceland or any team in the knockout stages, is Jake Livermore going to prove to be the difference? But I don't think so.
I don't want to sound like a Jake Livermore apologist. I mean, who would? But what would you expect of him to do to kind of put his stamp on the game? Because in the past we talked about having Jampard? Lampard and Gerrard.
I like that.
We talked about having these two all-action midfielders in the past, and they kind of tried to do a bit of everything. And because of that, the team's structure and shape kind of suffered. So maybe should we actually be expecting more from guys like Livermore, or should they just be able to just be the structure guys?
Well, I think it all depends on why he was in the team. You know why Dele Alli's in the team, you know why Lallana's in the team, you know why Eric Dier's in the team. I would love to know why or what Jake Livermore's role is. Was it to keep things ticking over? Was it to get around the pitch and really, you know, make a nuisance of himself? I saw some people say he was outstanding, and I was like, Did I literally miss 90 minutes of football? Because the only time I saw him do anything, he gave the ball away. I was like, oh my days, he's actually playing. So
he's luring them into a false sense of security.
Yeah. And if he's, you know, if he's still doing that, the game's finished. He might have wanted to do something when the game was actually going on, but maybe I missed it. Sometimes these things happen. But to me personally, he tried, he failed. Next player, I guess.
His selection highlights England's biggest problem, and this goes all the way back to the golden generation, is a lack of a world class or a top class holding midfielder. Every international team that's been extremely successful over the past 15 years has had a top class or world class holding midfielder, or even two or three in Germany's case.
But I guess that's what Jordan Henderson's job is, it's not Jake Livermore's fault that better players than him don't exist.
Of course it's not his fault, but it highlights a key issue. Even when we had Lampard and Gerrard, neither of them are real holding midfielders, and that was the issue that was always highlighted.
And then Owen Hargreaves stopped being able to run.
That was the only one, and that's when we looked at our best, is when we had Gerrard or Lampard alongside one of Owen Hargreaves. And even when Michael Carrick played in the sometimes, we looked like we had balance.
But then another player did that for a bit was Gareth Barry for a bit. I mean, Livermore could probably maybe become that kind of player.
The whole thing is that, like, England fans want, you know, and the FA are desperate to win a tournament. At this point, it's kind of like Arsenal, really. It's just like nothing's really going to do it apart from winning a tournament or getting at least to a competitive stage. But the team's just so far off, like, personnel-wise. And you look through the England squad and the options available, there's no one really there that you think that's going to be our elite defensive midfielder. I mean, maybe Ruben Loftus-Cheek, maybe.
I must admit, I'm a bit taken aback, really, because I didn't think that, considering it wasn't the most competitive fixture, it was more of a run out for both teams, one to test its tactics, one to kind of say goodbye to Lukas Podolski. I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't think it was that negative, really.
It was all right.
Yeah, it was. You would hope England could, you know, really make a statement, and they've done it in the past. You know, there was a 2-2 against Spain,
3-2 against Germany a few years ago.
There are these odd friendlies where England make a statement, and for someone like Jake Livermore, how many chances is he going to get? You know, Henson's going to come back from injury. You've got players like Tom Davis at Everton who can start knocking on the door. When you get your one chance, it might just be one chance, and you need to do something to take it. And if not, you know, he'll look back at it and go, what if?
Well, another player that actually did have a bit of an impact, he's definitely got a lot of positive press after the game, was Michael Keane. He lined up in his England debut in a back three, a bit unusual for a player. Burnley, obviously, he plays in a back four. I think he said last time he played in a back three was back when he's in Man United's academy, many moons ago. And we've got a question through from Chinnyman123 on Twitter, who said, why did Manchester United buy Rojo and why did they let Keane leave? Was that a major error from Van Gaal, or would he not have become the player he is today if he hadn't left United? He's obviously been linked with Liverpool now, so that's a bit of a needle of contention. What would you think, Kadeem?
I think when United sold Keane, no one batted an eyelid. It was like, youngster comes through, not quite good enough to make it at United, off he goes. That he's gone on to play for England, well done. But this isn't like when United let Pogba go. This was someone who wasn't quite good enough for United. And to be fair, he went away at Burnley, done really, really well. He got to an age where he needed regular football, and that he's gone on to do this well. You say fair play to him, but I don't think United are sitting there going, oh no, we let, you know, a world-class defender go. So
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't look at it as, oh, we let Michael Keane go, but we brought Rojo in. I'd say we let Michael Keane go because we had Chris Smalling, who we brought in from Fulham. And you look at the game against Germany, he was the best defender there. Also, as much as I like Michael Keane, it's much easier for centre-backs to look good in a back three. Just look at Gary Cahill all season at Chelsea. He's been carried a lot. And he's got Eric Dier and Jake Livermore in front of him. The setup helped Michael Keane. Yeah, he looked tidy, but the back three, when you're playing three centre-backs, it's easier to look a lot better. Not that he's a bad player. United were right to let him go, but they maybe also overestimate how good Rojo would be. But when you've got Smalling and Jones, you know.
Well, speaking of other players that might be able to find a niche in this new system under Southgate, Nathan Redmond and James Ward-Prowse in the squad as well. Do you see a future for them? And where do you think their breakthrough will come for England?
I mean, Nathan Redmond's joint second on the England under 21 appearances list, which is topped by James Milner, 46, which is ridiculous. Wow. And James Milner's probably been one of England's most solid players over the past 10 years, with amongst all the disappointments. Obviously, they have a role to play. 23 and 22, respectively, both technically very sound. The England under 21s, I know we're going to talk about them later, they're on a great run at the moment, and those two are like the leading lights. It looks like that team's been very, very well run by Southgate, ironically. So if he graduates the players correctly, he should. But we have a bit of a tendency of just promoting players a bit too quickly.
It's a bit part. They don't bring them through as a generation, really, do they?
Yeah, which is what I hope Southgate is planning with this under-21 squad, because they have a real togetherness and they play really well together. So there's definitely a role for them, but Redmond's a bit unlucky that the position we're strongest in is probably out wide. We've got Sterling, Lallana, Welbeck's good out wide. Sturridge can play there.
Rashford.
We've got loads of talent out wide, so he's a bit unlucky in that respect.
Jackie's got the work rate to play as a wing-back?
No.
That's kind of where the
he's not going to surpass
it?
Carl Walker or Danny Rose or Luke Shaw or Ryan Bertrand, though.
And Lingard can play there as well.
I forgot about Lingard. Yeah. He's also a good player on the wing.
Maybe we need a third flank, and then we can just, you know, play them all. But just on the point of James Milner saying goodbye to international football, because he has now retired, he had a while back. Obviously, the game was held basically in aid of waving goodbye to Lukas Podolski. It's a kind of a tradition in the German game. They call it a farewell match. Not everyone gets one. He was the 12th male German international to get one. There's been two female German internationals to also receive these special matches. There's no real criteria to it, but it's just like a nice thing they like to do when the time is right, I guess, and the fixtures are available there. Is that a tradition you'd like to see in English football, maybe? Wave goodbye to our best and our brightest when their time is finally done?
It really, really does not bother me. This is one of those moments where I'd sit on the fence. I think there's some players who you kind of look at and go, they deserve it. But at the same time, do they really deserve it? Podolski won a World Cup with Germany. What England players won anything? You know, you could have given one to Gerrard and Lampard, but then you would have gone, they disappointed for so long. They're now saying Rooney might get one, but
sounds like Hargreaves should have got one going off what we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
I think it's a ridiculous tradition. I don't know what they're doing. I think it's completely stupid.
You're definitely in the Lee Dixon school of thought. On ITV, he was. What was this?
A waste of everyone's time. What a waste of everyone's time. It's great that he scored a goal. Great.
Bastian Schweinsteiger cried when he had it.
Good.
But these are World Cup winners.
These are World Cup winners. They've had their moment. Stop milking it. I really don't like footballers milking their whole sort of farewell parade a la Gerrard, a la Schweinsteiger, a la Beckham. It's completely ridiculous. Podolski's been amazing, though. 49 goals in 130 games for Germany, mostly out wide. Loads of sub appearances. He's only 31.
Which
is great. Like
reverse Lallana. I still think Lallana's 23.
He's been a great servant and he's done a great job. But come on,
31. He's
got a whole testimonial against England.
He's moving to play in Japan after this summer. He'll tear it up surely at 31. I honestly thought he was like 34 or something.
He's one of the most limited players to have ever won a World Cup. He was a complete luxury player in every successful Germany squad over the past.
That goal to win the game against England.
It was great. Great strike.
Hammer.
Well, the commentator said, that's probably the best one he's ever scored, mate.
No.
Do you know what
Lukas Podolski does?
Next up for England is Lithuania in a competitive fixture. It's a World Cup qualifier. Who would you like to see come in to the game, to the team for that game?
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, 100%.
England's a joint second top scorer, as you said. That's need the goals.
He's always, weirdly for England, he's always played well when he's out wide. Recently, he's been playing in the hole for Arsenal and also dropping in deep. He's been he's been Arsenal's only good player recently. He's been putting in some one man midfield performances in a shambles of a squad, and I think he's got all the elements to do well internationally. He's quick. He's quite strong. He's tidy on the ball in possession. He can beat a man, and he can shoot as well. There's loads of, I don't know if you've seen, there's loads of training clips of him on YouTube actually smashing him in from 30 yards. So it's obviously just a confidence thing. And he's playing the best football of his career at the moment. It's just going completely under the radar. I'd love to see him play alongside Eric Dier in midfield for England against Lithuania. I think that'd be really interesting to watch.
And I mean, even if he doesn't play there, he's probably another one that actually could pull off the wing back role if he needed to as well. Jamie Vardy, we haven't spoke about him, but he led the line against Germany. Would you keep him as the main striker against Lithuania?
I would drop him instantly.
Oh, yes, really?
100%. I agree.
I thought he was quite good against Germany.
He can only play in a two.
I don't see Jamie Vardy this season. Yeah, since Ranieri's left, he's scored a few goals, but I just think he's so... I wouldn't say he's limited, but Jamie Vardy's one of those players where a lot of commentators say, oh, his work rate is excellent. And if that's your best thing about you, don't play professional football. Work rate. If you want to give me 100 grand a week, I will give you work rate. I will run around for 90 minutes. I won't really do much, but I will give you work rate. I think I wouldn't start Defoe. I'd start Rashford.
I start Rashford. He's the only one who can play in a three. Vardy can't hold the ball up, which is so important in international football. Lithuania are going to sit deep. Vardy can't impact against a team that's going to sit deep. That's his thing. And he only plays well in a two. So
I thought he was decent.
He was all right. Germany. Yeah, he was all right. Yeah, but Rashford would be so much better against that Germany team.
And Rashford had the ability to take on 2-3 players. Rashford can come deep and literally tear a defence apart. Vardy will sit on the shoulder and try and get behind. Yeah. And Lithuania will be sitting on the 6-yard box. So Vardy will do nothing for me.
Mm. Would you both stick with the 3-4-2-1?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
why not? It gets the best out of Dele Alli, who's awesome. So
and Lallana looks good in it as well.
Yeah, so do it. Lallana's been England's best player going forward for the past year and a half, so get the best out of him and get the best out of Dele Alli.
Who else would get in your strongest 11 for next year then, as things stand?
Kane,
yeah. I'd also drop Joe Hart, but I'm not a Joe Hart fan.
Butland. Project Jack, get Jack Butland
he's
in
not
there.
Play, he's not fully playing yet, is he?
I would have selected...
Next year?
Yeah. I would have selected Tom Eaton ahead of Joe Hart. And that's another problem of mine. You get these friendlies and, you know, well done, you gave Michael Keane a go, you gave Jake Livermore a go. Did we really need to see Joe Hart? I think Tom Eaton, he's had a really good season. Joe Hart, I think they said, conceded, 15 goals over the past few games at Torino?
He's not had a good...
He's made the most defensive errors of any player in the England squad in their domestic league this
season. And there was the one other weekend where you saw it and you went, oh my days, I think... All these commentators saying that Joe Hart needs to come back to Man City and Guardiola's made a mistake. You saw that clip and you go, that's exactly why he sent him out. Okay, there was a Cruyff turn. Good for him. But I would have given Tom Heaton a go and I think he deserves a start on Sunday.
Yeah, fair enough. Moving on quickly to the under-21s who also play Germany. That's tonight, actually, Friday night. Archie Ryan was actually tweeting before the senior fixture on Twitter. That's where people tweet. And he crunched the numbers. Prior to Mahmoud Dahoud's injury, Germany's under-21s boasted a total of 1,137 Bundesliga appearances. Without Dahoud, 1,085. England's under-21 squad, by contrast, have just 206 Premier League games between them. What do we make of that?
Well, first of all, I hope it's not going to be a testimonial game for Mahmoud Dahoud.
They might come up with shirts on.
Maybe like a name offing the hold up the shirt as if he's died.
Second of all, it's a really good point. It's that we've got a really good core of under-21 players who are not getting enough Premier League games, and it's a real issue. Players like Ruben Loftus-Cheek, we always have TVs on, we're always watching the under-21 games in the office. And Ruben
He plays like a floating number 10 for them.
He's always comfortably the best player on the pitch in these games. He looks like a man and the other look like boys. He finds it so easy as well. I don't know what he's doing with this. I mean, I'm worried that the agents of these players are maybe just saying, look, just wait for your chance, get a Premier League move, because that's where the big wages are.
Yeah.
They'd benefit so much from just either going down a level.
Michael Keane.
Yeah. that, or you know, going to a different league, or you know, whatever it might be, because they've only lost, this under 21 side have only lost 3 games since 2014, actually since mid 2013. They're on incredible runs since Southgate took them over, Southgate put the systems in place. They just need more game time. Imagine how good they could be in 3 or 4 years if they actually get some Premier League game time.
I think, you know, people talk a lot about Dele Alli and what he done at MK Dons, that was, you know, playing first team football. I think a lot of these kids really need to look at it and go, Ali's done so well, Michael Keane's done so well, you know, Tammy Abraham's doing well, just go
even
play.
Ryan Bertrand,
Ben Gibson,
go play Championship, League One for a season, just get
play
some
football,
yeah, because if not, you'll be 23, 24 and like, I've barely played football, and okay, you might get that, you know, second half career, but
You'll be Josh McEachran.
Yeah.
No offence to Josh McEachran. That's what will happen to you.
Whereas, I guess, if you're not too pressured about where you go, Harry Kane kind of shows that the loan system is also a great way, if you're a top six club, to get out there and play some football.
Look at Jack Wilshere.
Yeah. Look at Lingard at Derby.
Bolton. Yeah, I was going to say, Bournemouth now, that's more of a...
But even like Lingard at Derby, he done so well. And
Welbeck at Sunderland.
Yeah. These players, you just need to get out and play football. Mm.
Fair enough. Well, if you're listening, players, get out there and play some football. Just a quick one. Who would you say is your brightest, biggest hope of the current batch of under 21s? You're going to go with Loftus-Cheek?
Yeah, Loftus-Cheek. He's the type of player that we've never had in an England shirt. It'd be great to have someone like that. Obviously, he's a bit raw and unrefined, and he can be a bit slow. But he's basically Tom Huddleston, but he's good.
Tom Huddleston.
But he's good at short passing, and he's that's all right. Is he here? And he's not, you know, massively ponderous on the ball. He can beat a man, and he's
so that's the B movie Stamford Bridge version of Zinedine Zidane over there. any other players on your radar?
I think it's the same. I think a lot of those players. I'm a really big fan of Ainsley Maitland-Niles. And he's one, he can play...
Tank.
Yeah.
He can play everywhere.
Yeah.
It's really funny, I've known him since he was a kid. My aunt used to look after him. He's such a little...
We're moving into the exclusive section. Yeah, right.
I know. That's great.
Such a tenacious little kid. And I remember, I don't know how many years older than I am than him, but playing football with kids older than him, and he always, you know, got himself stuck in, kicking us. It's like, you're a little kid, stop it. He was such a good player, and he brought that into his game. And I think if he keeps on producing well at Arsenal, again, go out on loan next season, you know, but if he can get some more games underneath his belt, I think he's definitely one for the future.
Yeah.
I must admit, every time I've seen live for Arsenal this season, there's been moments where it's been a show, but when he's been good.
He had one bad game at right back, which really isn't his position at all.
Not at all.
I thought he was great in midfield.
He's a centre mid.
Yeah.
He's a centre mid. Another one, Chalobah, technically unreal.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a reason
cannot get a game.
There's a reason why Conte trusts him to come on in the last 10 minutes of all games, because he's actually like, I'll bring him on and he won't make a mistake and he'll just shut this down.
Yeah.
And I almost think he's kind of preparing him for a bigger role in the future. When he starts getting more European fixtures, maybe we'll start seeing a bit more of him next season. But moving on now to another kind of, I guess, local fixture in some ways. Ireland versus Wales. Now, this is a truly competitive match, because Ireland are top of Group D in their World Cup qualifying with 3 wins and 1 draw, whereas Wales, obviously Gareth Bale has been in and out of fitness over the last few months. They're third with 1 win and 3 draws. Serbia between them. Even if Wales win this, they're not going to quite catch up with Serbia. But with Gareth Bale fit again, is it time for Wales to kick on and regain that momentum which saw them not only get to Euro 2016, but finish in the final four?
Yes. That's my answer.
There was only one answer to that very loaded question.
I was looking at Ireland's squad before, to be honest, for the first time in a while before this podcast, and the list of their best players: Robbie Brady, Seamus Coleman, James McCarthy, Dave Hendrick, Myler, Shane Long. I mean, it's just very, very average. And you can have a system for that and you'll pick up the odd win in there. Martin O'Neill's a decent manager.
They're top of their group.
They're top of their group. But if you go to a tournament, Wales are the sort of team that can really do damage because they have Gareth Bale, because they have Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah.
You know, I back them to sort of turn it around and qualify, even if it's a bit of a mucky way. I think they're the best team there and they've got probably the best manager in terms of inspiring performances out of them. But, you know, I'd much rather see Wales at the World Cup because they can, because with Gareth Bale they can turn around amazing performances, and with Aaron Ramsey, Ireland is it's just a bit of much of a muchness, like so many international teams, which are really dredgers to watch.
I mean, when was the last time Ireland really had? And this isn't meant to be as disrespectful to any Republic of Ireland supporters listening, but they just, as Nick says, I guess they're just like a bit of stardust. When was the last time I had a player? Even Robbie Keane didn't quite, Roy Keane, you know. But he didn't in the way that, not in the way that, that Bale could. Like, he, I guess it, you kind of want to have like a really like self-sufficient attacker that can really grab a game by the scruff of the neck, I guess.
I think they're one of those teams that they will keep it tight, and they would for so long reliant on a Robbie Keane 1-0 win or 2-1, and that's really, really good, but it's nothing special. And
yeah,
it's just a bang average team, I guess.
You're not a believer in Shane Long?
Please.
I literally just flicked my eyebrows at you.
Shane Long is one of those players that if I hear, you know, Shane Long and work rate, I'm going to punch. I'm sorry, you're a striker. I don't want a striker that has amazing work rate. I need you to score goals. Don't run around for 90 minutes and not have a single shot, because, again, I can do that. My one-year-old son can do that. I just think if you're going to be a Premier League striker, work rate shouldn't be one of your top, you know, skills. It's embarrassing.
Be more Romario.
Yeah.
Be more Higuain.
Yeah.
Be Higuain.
Fair enough. Seamus Coleman said that Ireland are going to try and frustrate Bale. What do you make of that? How can they frustrate Bale? Is there a plan to contain him? Is it a case of stopping the ball getting to him?
Yeah, and I think if it does get to him, just kick him to the halfway line. Don't let him get on. Because once he gets on one of those runs and starts unleashing shots, it's difficult. If you kick him on the halfway line, concede a few free kicks, you might pick up a few bookings, but it stops any momentum. And yeah, just don't let him get going, I guess.
Yeah. Problem with Bale is that he can run at players, he can shoot from distance, he's got good close range finishing. He's also amazing in the air.
Yeah.
So he's kind of got that whole sort of plethora of Ronaldo finishing. I'm not saying he's good as Ronaldo, Real Madrid fans, calm down. but he's got that sort of whole suite of finishing. So it makes him a really awkward player to contain. And contrary to Ryan Giggs, he actually wants to play for Wales. So he plays absolutely fantastically for them every time.
Absolutely savage critique. just looking now at because there was some more competitive action actually over the last couple of nights in South America. We saw. You have to edit this out because I'm just scrolling down the page. Sorry.
There's a clap.
Are you ready? Right, here we go.
Are you ready?
So Brazil won 4-1 against Luis Suarez's Uruguay. Paulinho getting a hat-trick with a Firmino and Coutinho in the front three. A bit of Premier League interest there.
Said that going to China's completely reinvented his career, which is quite interesting.
Interesting. We often look at his retirement, it's this and that.
But yeah, he says, interestingly, I once queued behind Paulinho in a Tesco Express.
Really?
He bought 5 Freddos.
They're really expensive now.
Yeah, they're like...
How expensive are they in China?
I don't know, mate. But they were 30p at this Tesco.
Ouch.
And he bought 5 of them. And I was pretty impressed by that.
That's the Premier League wages kicking.
Yeah, exactly.
That TV money.
Lionel Messi scored the only goal as Argentina beat Chile, in their match. Alexis Sanchez, it's not just Arsenal, against which he has a bit of a paddy. He walked off, grabbing his shirt, twisting it in all sorts of shapes and directions. He's not a very happy man, generally, is he? You've got 2 lovely dogs. What's his problem?
He wants out of Arsenal. When, you know, he's obviously...
But he can't leave Chile, can he?
No, he can't, but I think it's just a frustration. He's just so frustrated at the moment. He needs to leave London and be happy again. Sometimes players just want to be happy, and he's clearly not at the moment.
He's going to hate Manchester.
Yeah,
he really is.
He is a hot-blooded South American male, is Alexis Sanchez.
Listen to Joy Division with the rain falling going, Pep, why did you do this to me? It's going to be terrible. Just moving back to Europe, going over the Atlantic Ocean, back another way, two-way ticket. Who do you think are Europe's strongest contenders for Russia 2018, and why? Are there any teams that are catching your eye?
I think it's the usual contenders. Germany... I think Spain will do well. And this Italy side with so many young players coming through, I am really looking forward to this team. And if they can, maybe next year might be a bit too early for them, but you will see a team that will go very far in 2020.
France for me.
How did I forget France?
He forgot France. I was sitting there waiting like a praying mantis.
You mean Monaco and friends?
He only forgot, I mean, for God's sake, front, if Deschamps gets the tactics right.
Yeah.
Pogba, Kante, Griezmann, Lacazette, Payet, Ben Yedder, unreal numbers of centre-backs.
Mbappe.
Martial, if he wants to
Bakayoko.
Bakayoko. They have got...
all the full-backs.
They've got an incredible team. They've got all the centre-backs as well. Laporte, Koscielny, I mean...
Zuma.
We're forgetting about Raphael Varane, who's quietly been one of the best centre backs in Europe over
Lloris
the past
couple
of years.
Lloris is all right as well.
Lloris is pretty decent in goal. I mean, and Giroud is the best plan B for international football ever.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a ridiculous team. They, I mean, just on paper, they should absolutely smash it. They have to get to the semi finals.
Which means
at least
they won't get out of the group stage.
Yeah, that's probably what it'll mean.
You know, with like expanding all the World Cup tournaments, should we just give France two teams?
You might
that could be fun, yeah.
France B. Something good, but why deny the tournament these players? Laporta as another player as well. We haven't mentioned. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. There's someone on Twitter did sort of three full 11s of current France teams, and the players in the third team were just completely bonkers. Mm. Like, you couldn't believe that it was like Bakary Sagna as like, he's like seventh choice right back.
Patrice Evra as well. Just, you know, just play
just
some Evra.
Just keeps going. Just keeps going.
And I think... sorry to kind of hark back to England, but that's, you know, one of the biggest problems. France can name three quality starting 11s. You get past England starting 11 and it's like, I think, was it Ben Gibson's being called up to England squad? Ben Gibson, really?
Yeah.
That's what you're, you know, it's not good enough. It
Stephen
really
and Zonzi.
Oh, yeah.
He's been one of the best midfielders in Europe.
He could have been under Big Sam's big, wonderful adventure as England manager. He
Big
could have
Sam's
been.
Big wonderful, wonderful adventure in big management.
And now we've got Southgate's sophisticated little, whatever it is. But I'm enjoying Southgate so far, and I'm excited to see what happens next. But which UK team, or UK and Ireland, I should say, are you expecting to see do best at the tournament next year?
I mean,
so obviously England were kind of, you know, shown up, weren't they, in the Euros?
Oh, completely. If Wales qualify, I expect Wales to go the furthest, but not very far.
Yeah.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if England, depending on the draw, if England crash out the group stages. They lack quality and they lack any sort of just experience. Like, fundamentally, they really lack it. And you know, Wayne Rooney's not going to save them.
You watch.
I think it will be any team that managed to get out of the group stage. I think that's how bad these teams are compared to other teams. And anyway, you know, it's turgid. Mm. It really, really is turgid. And that's me putting it nicely.
I'm going to go the other way. I think in the same way we're talking about Allardyce, he's way gone. We're past that. And in the way that Southgate's kind of got his time to build a project, I think that next year's team is when we will finally see the true O'Neill's Ireland. And I honestly think, as a unit, as a hard-working, coherent, like, well-coached unit with Roy Keane barking all the orders ever from the sidelines, I think they could go further than we think.
They need to stop playing Glenn Whelan in midfield then.
That's why?
Because you've got Harry Arter and James McCarthy,
yeah,
who
Harry
are actually decent.
Harry Arter's injured at the moment.
Yeah, but next year, Harry Arter and James McCarthy, that's an actual capable midfield.
Yeah.
Glenn Whelan is not a capable midfield.
Fair enough.
Anyone?
But I think once they've got a full and fit team, I think they could do things. I'm looking forward to seeing them try anyway.
All right, mate.
moving on now to something that I was surprised to hear it was on because I didn't even know about this. Nigeria played Senegal last night, actually, at the home of Barnet. The amount of talent in this fixture, Sadio Mane, Alex Iwobi, Kelechi Iheanacho, Idrissa Gueye, Why was this not better publicised? Why apparently there were hundreds of tickets still on sale on the night. Why do we not know about these fixtures taking place in London? And why aren't
it was
people
at
being
Barnet
sent to them? Yeah, but
it's
I was asked to go and I was like, where is it? And my friend said Barnet. I was like, I'm not doing it. I don't know if you put it in a Emirates or somewhere. Obviously, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, they're gonna be like, nope, you're not having our stadium. But you put it in Barnet. No one's going to go to Barnet on a Thursday night.
The Hive. What's
No.
I mean, also, did you watch the AFCON? Like, nobody wants to watch African football anymore after that AFCON.
It was all right.
It was awful. It was dreadful. Every single game was mind-numbingly boring. It's just a testament of physicality in football. There was barely any impressive like displays of technique across the whole tournament.
I think that was down to the surfaces. And the surfaces at Bonnet are exquisite. So I think we've missed that trick there. And Jake Entwistle, Squawker Jake Entwistle, did go down. And I think he had a great night. I think it was the access to the players actually quite good. I think maybe too good in the end. Poor Mane got mobbed by literally a crowd of selfie takers at the end and had to wander off the field to safety, maybe. But yeah, I'd like to know more about these kind of games next time that they're in my local vicinity.
Next time I get asked, I will forward it to you and say if you want to go, right, feel free to.
It's a Barnet. Okay, fair enough. We're going to move now to Premier League team of the season so far. I've asked you both to prepare your teams ahead of time and I have them here. Neither of you know the other one's side, but I do know them. And just to make it a bit more interesting, I've kind of gone away and I've looked at the numbers behind them. So we're going to actually see who's has got the best team and we're going to maybe have an ultimate 11 at the end. So
I'll play one FIFA for it.
Good idea. Wouldn't work on a podcast, sadly, but maybe a video cast.
Just lots of
cast.
Clicking noises from a remote, yeah.
Absolutely. Nick, would you like to go first? Who's your goalkeeper and why?
I've gone with David De Gea, which is alarmingly controversial, I know, but he's the best keeper in the league. Until a few months ago, I'd have probably gone with Hugo Lloris, but David De Gea is so good, and there's so many times where he seems to always do that save where a shot hits the outside of the post, and then when you look on the replay, it's actually because David De Gea has made an unbelievable fingertip save.
Yeah.
He's the best keeper in the league by a distance. He might be the best keeper in the world. It's got to be David De Gea.
Thibaut Courtois?
No.
No?
No. He's protected so much.
Fair enough. Who's your goalkeeper?
I went with Tom Heaton.
Ooh.
All right.
I did think of De Gea, but I think...
Save merchant.
No, I think he hasn't had one of these, oh my days, amazing seasons. I think in previous years, he saved so many shots. I think this year, he's had a good season. I'm not saying he's been bad, but I think some of the saves in games Burnley have done well in, it's because Tom Heaton has produced Spider-Man-like saves and... He's just got so many arms at the moment. He's just stopping everything. And I again, which is why I think he should have been England's keeper against Germany.
I guess in some ways you've picked two different genres of keeper. You've gone for the big six, kind of doesn't have much to do, but when he does, he makes it happen. And then, Kadeen, you've gone for the man under fire type thing. So, interesting. According to Squawk's performance score, it's probably didn't surprise anyone, David De Gea takes this one. He beats
clean sheets, clean sheet merchant.
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, that's Nick one.
I will say Tom Heaton's been unbelievable. Just very quickly on Tom Heaton, I will say he's been unbelievable this season. But there's always one keeper every season who plays for a sort of lower tier club who looks like the best keeper in the league. I remember when David Marshall at Cardiff City looked to be like the best keeper.
Oh, we all remember David Marshall.
I do think Tom Heaton's better than him in fairness, but you know, it's flitting.
Fair enough. We're going to move on now to, interesting, you both come back threes. We're going to move on now to two centre backs.
Three.
Would you like to offer your, yes, we're going to go for the first one. So, in the second person in this team is a centre back. So who's your first centre back going to put up for contention there?
I'll Toby Alderweireld. Basically, Spurs are title winning side with him, and without him, they're just about qualified for the Champions League side.
Well, considering you've both put him in, I guess he gets in. Yep. There you go. Well done, Toby. Big clap for you.
Good does.
Kadeem, your next centre back, please.
I'm going to go with David Luiz.
David Luiz, who's in both teams.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's a nice bit of consensus there for two of the back three. But now we have a bit of a battle on our hands. All so right. Nick's gone for Virgil van Dijk. Kadeem has gone for...
Azpilicueta.
Yeah. So again, two different styles. You've gone for the commanding kind of all-action proper centre-back. You've gone for the converted full-back. Great on the ball. He's made more passes than ever any other defender in the Premier League this season. But I can tell you, according to performance score, which is what we're using to decide this here today, Van Dijk just edges it. Even though he's injured, Van Dijk 7-0-1 versus Azpilicueta's score of 6-9-2. It was close.
Very close.
The margins were fine.
Thing is, when Van Dijk got injured, Southampton lost 4 on the bounce, and they've just about recovered from losing him. So he is so important to that team and how they were playing defensively. He's so good, and he gets goals.
Will you take that, Van Dijk?
I honestly forgot about him because he's been injured. So I probably would have picked him had I...
So in some ways, it's a back three that you both would have picked.
Yes.
Nice. Nice. Going to move now to wing backs. And there's, again, a bit of a difference of interpretation. Nick's gone for two very attacking players in almost Pep Guardiola-esque move of sticking De Bruyne and people like that wide. Whereas, Kadeen, you've gone for more traditional wing backs. So you've gone for Antonio Valencia and Danny Rose.
Yep. I think Valencia has just been amazing this season. I think you look kind of at his United career and you would forget he was a winger. And I don't mean just any winger. He was a get forward, cross and get a, you know, loads of assists. I think he's been amazing at right back. And Danny Rose, I don't think there's been many other left backs. I've seen quite a few people say arguably the best left back in the world at the moment.
Pep Guardiola seems to think so.
Yeah, I think he's been brilliant.
Whereas Nick, you kind of have to explain this a little bit. You've gone for Sadio Mane down the right and Gylfi Sigurdsson down the left.
All right. It's a 3-4-1-2 with the four is facing forwards, definitely on the edges. I just couldn't not put Sadio Mane in. And then I thought, if I'm putting Sadio Mane in, I need an attacking left play on the left flank. And Gylfi Sigurdsson has low-key been outrageously good for most of the season, and even better since Paul Clement's coming in. But Kadeem's right, like Danny Rose and Antonio Valencia, like that back five you got there are solid as, like there's nobody getting past
I'm sorry to cause arguments, but he's wrong.
Oh,
no, you're both half right. Okay. So Antonio Valencia takes the right wing.
Okay.
And Gylfi Sigurdsson
that's what
actually probably because he's just been incredible for assists and all that, actually gets in ahead of Danny Rose. So I'm not sure what the left flank's going to do, but I'm going to love
watching
it. He's
not going to defend, is he?
Exactly. You're going to move now to the middle of midfield, and again there's one player you both agree on. I don't think anyone's going to be surprised. N'Golo Kante gets in.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Best midfielder in the league by an absolute country mile.
But who is second place in this battle of wits? You've gone with Moussa Dembélé, Nick. And Kadeem has gone for Paul Pogba.
Ooh. Yeah. I think there's a video doing a round on Twitter at the moment, and it's of Pogba just playing all these passes. And I think if you've... it's going to be really contentious. If you take away the stats, I think Pogba should have got at least 10 more assists this season. He has put some balls on the plate, and between Martial's, Latin, Mkhitaryan, Mata Rooney, they have missed some golden opportunities. And I think Jose said that United have been unlucky. I think their finishing had been so poor, and that's not the fault of Pogba. I think Lampard and a few others have said it this season, for 89 million, you kind of want more from him, but there is nothing he can do if he is playing these three balls and his partners aren't finishing them off. So for me, I think Pogba has been brilliant.
Well, I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss the stats, because according to the stats, Pogba gets in.
Ugh.
Unfortunately. But then again, I will say Dembélé, he's not played every game this season. So I think Pogba just takes this one. But with Kante next to him, we talk about him needing the perfect partner to show what he can do. Kante's going to be that guy, isn't he? Really? So
looking to Russia 2018. 100%. It's going to be Pogba Kante.
You've both gone for Eden Hazard in the hole.
Surprising.
There we go. You've also both gone for Harry Kane as well, which leaves a straight shootout between
Ibrahimovic
and
Romelu Lukaku. I don't know what Lukaku has to do to be considered like one of the best strikers in Europe. Like, what does he have to do? He scores.
Got six assists as well as 21 goals.
He's got more assists than Kane, Ibrahimovic, any of those top strikers. He's got more goals than them, and he's doing it for Everton. Like, the guy's absolutely ridiculous. He's been doing it on the spin every single season now for five seasons. He's only 23.
Wow.
I mean, he's an absolute joke of a player, and
I did have Lukaku. At first I had Kane and Lukaku, and then Skorka's own Tashan chatting to him this morning, and he was like, what about Ibrahimovic? And I thought about it, and he's currently suspended for three games, and he'd kind of run in that period where he didn't score for a few games, but I think when he has been needed, he's popped up with some big goals. And again, I think it's one of those things where Lukaku probably also does deserve it, but for me, I think given his age as well and how everyone thought he was going to be a massive bust, Ibrahimovic has proved everyone wrong. And
Well, again, turn to the numbers. Ibrahimovic takes it. Ibrahimovic and Kane up front. One, I will say for both sides, Ibrahimovic has missed more big chances than any other player in the Premier League this season, yet he has also completed more through balls than any striker in the league this season as well. So, there's a bit of both going on there.
The thing is, I'd pick Lukaku. I'd rather have Lukaku and Ibrahimovic than Kane and Lukaku. I just have Lukaku. He's the best striker in the league. He just is, for me.
I think if Jose didn't have Lukaku at Chelsea, I think Lukaku would be the perfect person to replace Ibrahimovic at United. However, it probably won't happen, and I would implore Arsene Wenger, if he stays,
my God,
to go and buy Lukaku, because that
is the perfect Arsenal striker.
Yeah,
could you imagine?
Giroud's good, but if you put Lukaku in that Arsenal side, oh my God.
Absolute scenes.
I did a piece actually, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Lukaku beats Giroud when it comes to aerial duels.
Yeah.
His take on success rate is ridiculous.
His talent ceiling.
He's basically a winger in the body of a giant poacher.
And that's
amazing.
Go on.
No, I think one thing Ozil really lacks is a striker who can run in behind. Mm. And even though he's an absolute tank, Lukaku can do that. Mm. And get away from the defender. So
The only thing he can't do is hold up play. He isn't a target man. He's still learning.
He's 23. Mm. Like, everyone always compares him to...
I wasn't criticising that, but I'm saying that he's so difficult to deal with because he's not what you expect him to be.
Yeah, and like he always gets compared to Didier Drogba, who's the master of hold up. But Didier Drogba only really learned that when he was like 25, 26 in his last career at Marseille.
They were only compared like because he got signed by Jose Mourinho at Chelsea as well. Yeah. So
Romelu Lukaku's talent ceiling is absolutely preposterous. Mm. It's absurd how good he could be if he... You know, if he keeps going how he's going.
Yeah.
Jose needs to eat humble pie and buy him for United next season. He really... Look, thing is, he won't, but it's just... He's going to go somewhere else and every United fan's going to go, why did you let him go?
Mm-hmm. Well, that feels like that's a good place to end. That's all we've got time for on this week's podcast. We've got a few questions we're going to go through, but we're going to have to save them for the next show, unfortunately. But thank you for sending the questions in. We are always delighted to have them through, and do send more through to both myself and Nick on Twitter and the Squawker Twitter account. But thank you for listening to us and joining us this week. Kadeem, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much. Very, very, very quickly, this is really strange, but I would like to say happy birthday to my little sister, Simone. She is 10 today. So
happy birthday, Simone.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Is she a subscriber on iTunes?
She will be after today.
Well, we'll blow some candles out and all the rest of it for her shortly. And Nick, thank you very much for coming on.
Romelu Lukaku.
When are you going to be hosting the pod again?
I'll be back in on Monday. Wonderful. And we're gonna try and analyse that England-Lithuania game, which is probably going to be a 2-0 scrappy win.
Wowzers. As I said, with a few more questions, we'll pick up then, I imagine. So, look forward to that, and thanks for joining us.